Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have with me my guest, Dr. Carl Helvey, who is the author of a book called You Can Beat Lung Cancer, Using Alternative Integrative Interventions. Carl is a 38-year survivor of lung cancer, so he's writing from his own personal experience. He is also a nurse practitioner, an educator, author, and researcher with national recognitions. And Carl has his own radio show, a holistic health radio show that I've been on. And we've been talking for a number of years now, and I've been waiting for this book to come out because I feel like it's the best book out there on specifically on lung cancer, but also for anybody who wants to prevent cancer or wants to treat cancer, really no matter what the cause. Welcome, Carl. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Dr. Kolb. I'm happy to be with you.
So, you had a surprise when you were 42, but that cancer diagnosis came to you because you followed your intuition. Is that correct?
Yes, right. Mm-hmm.
You want to tell that story to our listeners? Because it's fairly interesting, about especially with cancer, because you need to follow your guidance with that.
Right. Well, I had a dream that told me to go for a chest X-ray. And I always listen to my dreams because I feel that's one way that God speaks with me. God speaks sometimes through my dreams, through my intuition, and through other people. And I had a very conservative primary care physician, but I approached him and told him I wanted the chest X-ray. And he said, why? And I said, I just want one. And he said, well, do you have symptoms? And I said, no, I just want an X-ray. Well, I finally convinced him that I should have a chest X-ray, and when the results came back, there was a spot that had not been there previously. So they asked me to come in for a biopsy, and I went in the hospital, and they did the biopsy, and then the surgeon comes in and says they're doing surgery, and I said, wait a minute. I said, I came for a biopsy. I did not come for surgery. I do not make snap decisions. And I go home, I think about it, I pray about it, and then I make a decision. And they told me, well, you'll be dead in 6 months. And I said, well, that's my decision. Your responsibility is to tell me the pros and cons of surgery. My responsibility is to make the decision whether I want that or not. So that started it, Dr. Kolb.
And then what happened?
Well, then I came home. I prayed about it. I had a very close friend named Ursula, who actually was my physician's sister, but he never knew this. And she had worked with a lot of cancer patients, getting them into alternative care. And there was a physician in Northern Virginia who had worked for the National Cancer Institute and had had so much success with Laetril that the FDA and the medical profession closed them down. And so he moved to Vienna, Virginia, and he continued providing the care, but it was done under the table, and I had to sign forms that I wouldn't report him. And my friend Ursula also asked if I'd like a psychic reading. And I suggest, and she thought that the person that she referred me to in Florida was one of the best, and he did a reading and confirmed that there should be no surgery, that it should be treated naturally. Ursula watched her dreams, I watched my dreams, and we all got the same, that it should be treated naturally. And so I went to the physician in Vienna, Virginia. He did more tests and confirmed that it was lung cancer. And he gave me half of my regime. And then being a nurse, I added the other half of the regime myself because I wanted to use a very holistic approach.
You want to describe a little bit about the B17 treatment, because that's something that, that's a treatment that's very, very, I guess, a one that has stood the test of time, and let our listeners know what the current status is for Laetril or B17.
Mm-hmm. Okay. He prescribed a vitamin B17 or Laetril, 2,000 milligram a day, split up over three doses. He also prescribed pancreatic enzymes and digestive enzymes, as well as a variety of vitamins, minerals, and herbal supplements. And one thing I was concerned about was vitamin A, because I was taking about 3,000 international units daily for the first week, whereas, you know, the daily recommended allowance is about 5,000. But they told me that taking high doses of vitamin E, another fat-soluble vitamin, would decrease the harmful effects of the vitamin A. And I tried to find out why they did the A, and there is some thought that vitamin A keeps normal cells from becoming cancerous cells. Now, as far as the Laetril, I've read in books since that Laetril has cyanide in it, and it will kill you, and the apricot kernels will kill you. And I thought, well, it's a good thing I didn't know that 38 years ago, because I was taking 2,000 milligram a day plus 25 kernels. And, I mean, I had no side effects at all. Well, the theory is that the vitamin B17 is very specific to cancer cells, because cancer cells have an enzyme that releases the cyanide in the vitamin B17, and normal cells do not have that enzyme, so that they are not affected by the cyanide, but that the cyanide kills the cancer cells. Now, I did a series on cancer a couple of years ago, and I interviewed other people that used it more currently and also used this back about 32, 34 years ago. One woman I remember had melanoma and had been given a three-month sentence. And she went to California and had the IV Laetril, and she's still fine, has never had any problems since. And I've never had any recurrence, any problem. And I think, well, you know more about this, Dr. Cole, than I do, because you work with these patients all the time. But it seems like, from what I read, that there is often a recurrence following chemo, especially chemo and radiation. Mm-hmm. And but I've never had any side effects to things like that. Side effects.
Yeah, Carl, I can explain why that is. Chemotherapy kills cells based on different mechanisms, depending on the type of chemo, but it always does leave a few resistant cells behind because of its mechanism of action, similar to antibiotics. So when you have a cancer cell that is resistant to, say, the three chemotherapy agents you were given, it's a pretty hardy cell. It's got some interesting, survival abilities. And it starts to replicate. So when it comes back, it comes back as a tougher variety. And sometimes they switch to different chemotherapy, but a lot of times that doesn't work either. Just like super bugs, super resistant bugs. But there's certain things that that kill every cancer cell, and cyanide is one of them. Okay, there's not a cyanide-resistant cancer cell, you see. It has to do with how much you take and the dose, and then, like you said in your own program, what you can take to protect the other cells from cyanide. Because there's some you know, some manipulations you can do, maybe to take a little bit more, higher doses without getting side effects because you protect other cells. So it's all just chemistry and physiology and, you know, reasoning and functional medicine. But, you know, I think that people, I think that's why you didn't get a recurrence, because you would have to have a new cancer to recur. But your program that you were on decreased the risk of any other cancers coming up.
Now, I think the doctor that I saw was very progressive, considering this 38 years ago, even to the diet, because he put me on a diet that was 75% raw fruit and vegetables, grains, and nuts. And then I could have some cooked fruit and vegetables beyond that, but I could have no animal protein, no dairy. I couldn't have sugar. And, you know, the research more and more in the last few years seems to substantiate that kind of a diet. The one thing that seems to be, there's a deviation by at least one physician, but I don't think anyone else does, and that has to do with the proteins. And I think it's Dr. Gonzalez that thinks that there are two types of people. There are those that are acidic and those that are alkaline, and that the alkaline do not need the acidic proteins, whereas the other group do. But I think most doctors subscribe pretty much to the fruit, vegetables, grain, and nuts. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, I think that if you know that you're an acidic type, which I am, and you say you are too, that you can do some things on a daily basis to help decrease your risk of diseases in general, especially viruses, cancers, and fungi, and yeast, because that goes along with being acidic. That goes anywhere from taking mineral supplements, and I think you use lemon, is that right?
I use lemon, and I also use something that is put out by Zuma. It's a mineral, as you mentioned. It's primarily calcium and magnesium, and I add it to my water, and I drink in that water all day.
And you can also get alkalized water. There's a number of different machines on the thing, and I just have a little thing that's filled with minerals that I stick in a distilled water bottle and drink that all day. But what I found is useful is buffer pH, especially when my diet isn't as good as it should be. I go out to a lot of dinners as a doctor, you know how that is. And so I cheat, and I just take 3 to 6 buffer pH a day. It's a balanced buffer solution that is just in a pill form. So, you know, it's kind of like cheating. But, you know, I'd probably be better off eating a lot of fruits and vegetables, but they don't serve fruits and vegetables at the dinners very much. They don't have the healthy juicing diet that we should all be on. So it is important to know if you are one of these metabolic types, because I think it really does increase your risk of cancer, especially if you have smoked or have radon in your home, or, you know, any of the different things that increase your risk of lung cancer and other cancers. You know, it's really every cancer that does well under acidic environments. So that's important. I wanted to ask you about protocell. I'm trying to figure out what protocell is. It's your chapter by Tanya Pierce.
Right.
And
I must confess, I know very little about protocell. I've read the chapter a couple times, but I haven't studied it enough to really know much about it. I know that she had some very good case studies in the book of lung cancer patients that had used it. And the reason that I asked her to write the chapter, and there has been controversy around that, I used a company in England as the publisher because I was concerned that with some of the controversial information the American companies might take things out that I wanted left in.
And sure.
John
yeah.
Hunt agreed that they would not take anything out. And so when they reviewed my proposal, I got rave reviews from everyone in England and in Europe. But the only negative review I got was from the United States. And mm-hmm. the thing that the person pulled out was the Protocell. And he said it had not been approved by the FDA. And consequently, he did not think they should publish this book. My feeling is the FDA, well, I'll give you an example of what I think of the FDA, if I may. Mm-hmm. May I?
Sure.
And that is with one of my authors. He was recommended to me, and I looked up, I did a Google search, and I found that he had been in trouble with the FDA and had been in trouble with the medical profession. And so I thought, well, what is this man doing that is so great that he is a threat to the FDA and to the medical profession? Because I believe that people want to keep the status quo because cancer is a multi-billion-dollar industry.
And $8 billion per year in the U.S.
Give wings. The American Cancer Society remains in effect, and on and on and on.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
when I looked up, this particular physician was having something like 46% five-year survival for all stage 4 cancer patients, whereas the traditional was somewhere between 2 and 5%. So I thought, well,
right.
it makes sense. He's a threat because he's being very, very successful in his
yeah.
treatment of cancer.
He's
patients.
Lucky he's still alive, seriously.
Yes, he is.
No, really.
So,
yeah.
So
and he wrote a chapter in your book, too. Is that right?
Pardon?
Did you have...
Yes,
is,
he did.
Is that
yes.
James Forsythe?
He wrote.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah, that's
right,
a,
right.
That's an amazing chapter that he wrote.
Right. And so... You know, my thought was, well, Protocell, she's got case studies on it, and
mm-hmm.
she has a lot of confidence in this, and I've been friends with Tanya for some time now. And
mm-hmm.
so I thought, well, I want the chapter left in because she said she'd take it out if I wanted it. I said, no, I want it
yeah.
left in because I've worked with homeless and low-income people for many, many, many years as a nurse in public health, and I thought, well, vitamin B17 is a relatively inexpensive treatment that could be done
mm-hmm.
mostly at home, and the Protocell would be a second low-cost treatment that could be done at home, and so I was thinking primarily of that population and wanting something that they could use if they couldn't afford to go travel or
mm-hmm.
or have insurance.
Right.
Well, even insurance doesn't always pay for the alternative. But I wanted something for that population.
Yeah, well, she has a program for lung cancer. Now, it doesn't say what Protocell is, but it's the Protocell Formula 50, ellagic acid, which we use here, curcumin, pawpaw, which is interesting. I've had pawpaw on my holistic cancer list for many years. I never really used it, but now I know the mechanism of action, and then
mm-hmm.
vitamin
mm-hmm.
D3. That's a very simple formula and not
mm-hmm.
real expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So it is good to provide a you know, a very affordable protocol. I think that's great.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to stop by saying that, you know, I believe in applied kinesiology, so what we do
mm-hmm.
here is muscle test or do applied kinesiology to see each component of the program we put people on. You know, we do surgery, obviously, because we're a surgery center.
Mm-hmm.
Not always, though, because muscle testing doesn't always indicate that surgery is advisable. And that's kind of what you got for yourself, is that that wouldn't be
mm-hmm.
advisable. And, you know, the protocol itself is a result of interviewing at least 35 people from all over the world on cancer treatments, both traditional and the doctors I interview are traditional and integrative. They do both.
Mm-hmm.
They're
mm-hmm.
not just traditional, but mm-hmm. Some of them have been doing a lot of different things. But they're just basic principles, you know, alkalinity rather than acidity, avoiding
mm-hmm.
sugar, you know, a diet high in enzymes and low in things that are hard to digest, like a high protein diet.
Mm-hmm.
All of these things are pointed out in your book. But certainly, you know, there is individual differences. And, you know, some of my patients, like I treat a lot of breast cancer, a fair number mm-hmm. of my patients test very high for Aramidex, which is an estrogen blocker. And, of course, we usually know their estrogen status on their tumor. And so, you know, it's not that traditional treatments aren't advisable. It just depends on mm-hmm. what kind of cancer you have and what sort of situation you're in. You know, some
mm-hmm.
very poor people who have Medicaid, they are more likely to test for the traditional treatments because they simply can't afford the alternative
right. mm-hmm.
treatments.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I was interested in Protocell, because obviously there's a group of people out there that really have hardly more than $60 a month to spend on supplements.
Right. Right.
They just don't
right.
have disposable right. income. They're on a fixed, you know, fixed budget, as you
mm-hmm.
know. And so that's a patient population group that often gets traditional medicine but doesn't get the supportive, you know, alternative and
mm-hmm.
supplements that they need,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially if you're going to do traditional cancer treatment. So,
right.
Like I said, you know, I'm not one way or the other. I just feel like
mm-hmm.
everybody's different. They have different financial, different spiritual. You have to work within people's belief system, too.
Right.
If they believe
right,
chemotherapy
right.
will work and do not believe that Laetril will work,
right.
you got a problem. I suggested Laetril for my mother, who had gastric
mm-hmm.
cancer, and she lived much longer than she should have, you know, on the protocols. But I really believe had she been on Laetril, you know, she may have done very well. But my
mm-hmm.
brother, you know, decided that that wasn't, you know, safe. You know, so I
right,
was okay,
right.
you know. But no, I think Laetril and the cyanide science is very, very solid and
mm-hmm.
something that I really
it's difficult,
feel.
Susan, to buck family and colleagues, because I found that when I
oh, yeah.
chose
yeah.
not to have traditional. And like your brother, you know, everyone, including my mother, said,
yeah.
well, do what the doctor wants you to do, and then do
right.
these other things. But that did not feel right to me.
Right.
So it's very difficult to buck the system. And I
well,
agree
and
with you.
Yeah, I think also, too, I have a different belief system in that
mm-hmm.
death is not something to be avoided at all costs. You know,
right,
my
right.
mom was 88 when she died, and she had to go out with something, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I knew that she could have lived longer had she done certain things, but I don't think she wanted to live longer. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
She
right.
had been married
right.
for over 60 years to my father, and he had had 16 years with prostate cancer and actually was doing very well until the FDA pulled PC specs off the market, and then I couldn't really ever get him on anything that worked. You know, just really, the most important thing that we ask a cancer patient is, you know, do you want to live? You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, and so many of my cancer patients tell me, you know, they know exactly when they started this process because they didn't want to live. You know, there was a point in time where they didn't want to be here, and that thought was so powerful that they feel that it started the cancer process in, you know, in motion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not that that's always there, but if that is there, that like with my mother, she really didn't have any joy in life. I don't think, you know, I think that going out with cancer is a choice, you know, and you have
right.
to respect that.
Right.
You know, you really do. So all of these things go into it. Now, you've done a very nice job in the book talking about the spiritual aspects, and you're a prime example of somebody who followed their internal guidance. I tell my cancer patients that cancer is like a, you know, like a finals exam
mm-hmm.
in
mm-hmm.
intuition, because if you just give up and say, okay, the doctor says I have 6 weeks to live, then that's probably what's going to happen. But if you follow your own inner guidance, there may be a way out of it. And even, in, you know, in a cancer diagnosis is very grim. When you were diagnosed with lung cancer, what was the five-year survival then?
I don't really know.
It was probably less than 2%, wasn't it?
It has never gotten much above 2 to 5%, right.
Right. So you had to follow your own particular guidance.
On the internet, most people think that if they survive 20 years with lung cancer, that's really great. So I don't think most people anticipate living very long with lung cancer. And I guess mm-hmm. there is a reality thing to that, in that the symptoms don't usually appear until it's quite advanced.
Right.
And, you know, then it's more difficult to treat. But I think that, as you say, because of my spiritual beliefs and my God speaking with me, mm-hmm. it may have been picked up earlier than it would have had I waited for symptoms.
Yeah, I smoked 20 years, and I had a mm-hmm. family that was very, very high in genetic factors for that resulted in lung cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Or so it would seem, because on one side of my family there was a lot of lung cancer. So I've had kind of, you know, interesting guidances throughout the years in kind of keep an eye on how much I am at risk for lung cancer. And you mentioned SEACT in here, and that's one of the things that I've used to decrease that risk.
Mm-hmm.
SEACT was originally used in breast cancer, but I think it can be used in a lot of different kind of cancers. Isn't that right?
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Mm-hmm.
So it's a
And it was a nurse that started using that. Isn't that interesting?
I'm sorry,
but
what
she
now?
Met, it was a nurse that started using the SEACT.
Right. It was true. It's about six different herbs, right? It's
Right, uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's
I don't know.
It's some of the
same
herbs that Hoxie used back in the 30s.
Right.
I think, and Casey, I believe, also mentioned some of those same herbs. So mm-hmm. I think that they were using some of the same herbs, but they were using them in different proportions and different herbs, and they all seem to be having success with them.
I actually made the tea myself.
Did you?
Boil it. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then put it in containers and drank it twice a day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was what I was guided to do. And I had a parasite, gnathostomiasis, which is, and you probably know the risk of cancer with parasites. And this mm-hmm. parasite went in my lung, so it was not good. So I had to do something really quick. But but I survived it, which was good. But I had to treat with antiparasitics and
mm-hmm.
I interviewed Huldah Clark before she died, and I really am almost convinced that it would be a good idea to muscle test people when they're about 45 or 50 to mm-hmm. see if they don't need antiparasitics, either natural or you know, the drugs to
mm-hmm.
to kill off parasites, because so many cancers are associated with parasites.
Right.
You know,
right.
We don't realize. They say that people with high C-reactive proteins have an increased mm-hmm. risk of cancer. I think that link is not just inflammatory diet. I mean, my C-reactive protein went sky high when I had parasites. And I
mm-hmm.
just, I got parasites, by the way, from eating at a known chain, I won't mention on the air,
mm-hmm.
but lox and bagels, okay?
Oh.
I don't eat sushi. I mean, and I don't, you know,
no,
I don't get,
either.
I mean, it was a situation that was surprising to me that you can get that sort of thing from lox and bagels.
Mm-hmm.
Well, lox, maybe. Maybe not the bagel. So people need to know that that there are, you know, that a lot is known about cancer. Unfortunately,
right.
Your doctor doesn't, your average doctor doesn't know much of it, you know, but
right.
Preventative
right.
stuff, becoming alkaline, your diet, your supplements that you take, and then maybe antiparasitic cleanses and SCACT once a year like you
oxygenation.
Do.
Oxygenation.
The oxygenation, yeah, staying.
Right.
Heavy
even
duty,
exercise, they're finding, has a very important part. Now, one thing, Susan, that was controversial, and I approached a physician about doing an endorsement, and he refused because he said that he had worked for 15 years telling people not to use soy products.
Uh-huh.
But the research shows that soy products decrease lung cancer risk.
Really?
Even, and in people that stop smoking. If they're smoking and they stop and they take soy,
mm-hmm.
it decreases their risk. But he wouldn't, and there's a lot of research on soy and lung cancer risk
mm-hmm.
and treatment. But he wouldn't write it because he said that soy was bad for you. Well, I'm not sure, because I didn't communicate further with him, but I'm not sure
mm-hmm.
if he meant because it was so genetically modified or whether it was soy itself, because soy is one of the products that is most often genetically modified.
Oh, almost all soy.
What are your thoughts
on soy? Now is genetically modified. And specifically, I'll tell you this, and you may not know this, genetically modified
mm-hmm.
soy, in my experience, in myself and in my practice, lowers
mm-hmm.
the immune system, specifically
mm-hmm.
the T-cell immune system, so that, you know, a genetically modified soy product may actually increase your risk of any cancer.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
But regular soy is a different story. The only problem that I see with regular soy is if people are a little bit hypothyroid and they
mm-hmm.
take soy, they become a little bit more hypothyroid.
Oh.
So, you know, that's just soy. But you can
mm-hmm.
counter that with a thyroid supplement or even low-dose thyroid.
Mm-hmm.
And then soy is used extensively in women to prevent menopause symptoms. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, it blocks dangerous estrogens, I think,
mm-hmm.
From going in those receptors. So it may also prevent breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's an estrogen based breast cancer, theoretically. I mean, I don't know
mm-hmm.
if we know, but you know, we live in a world that's so screwed up. I mean, now you can't trust that any product, especially corn or soy,
right. uh-huh. mm-hmm.
that you get off the shelf, even at Whole Foods, is not genetically modified, and that's per Whole
right.
Foods statement.
Right. Right. Right.
Isn't that amazing?
Right,
and
it is.
Corn
right.
causes and allergies, gut allergies. It doesn't, you know, affect the immune system like soy does. But,
mm-hmm.
but anyway, you know, I think it's crazy. I think it's just a really, really bad idea that had a bad origin with Monsanto.
Right.
I mean,
Definitely.
It was a bad idea, and they can't control it. They can't control, you know, the cross pollinations and the, you know, and there's a real problem with the seeds. If you only have three or four types of corn in the world versus
mm-hmm.
200 types of corn, what happens when you
mm-hmm.
get a blight? I mean, what happens? You
right.
lose all your crops and you start getting people starving to death if you genetically modify all the main foods. You know, you have to have seed diversity. That's environmental
right,
science
right.
101.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, the whole thing's kind of crazy. But
right.
we have some people in positions of power that just simply don't understand basics.
Right.
And
or this payoff. I hate to think of that, but you know, I see more and more the greed and the money and all of that being involved in. anything that where money can be made.
Yeah, but, you know, at some point, I mean, you know, and I know, and anybody who's had a challenging illness knows that money can't buy health. I mean,
no, it can't.
Really can't. I mean, the only thing that can get you through a dangerous situation like I faced with my, you know, lung situation and parasites, and you face with your lung cancer, is your own guidance.
Right.
I mean, I woke up from surgery and I felt exactly where the problem was in my lung. Exactly. And I confirmed it with, like you did, I confirmed it, you did the biopsy. I didn't do biopsy, but I confirmed it with my doctors, and I confirmed it with clairvoyance, medical intuitives, and then I started to treat it. You know, surgery wasn't an answer for me. You can't cut parasites out.
Right.
But
Susan, was that controlling, that Monsanto getting into the government and all of that, and
Taylor's the head of the FDA
all
now.
All people want is for things to be labeled, but we can't even get that. And so there has to be some payback.
Because that would interfere with their profits.
right. So there has to be some payback to agencies in order to continue something that people don't want.
Yeah. I mean, for those who don't know it, the head of the FDA, I think currently, was the vice president of Monsanto. Is that right now?
Right.
Is that
right.
Still true?
I think so, right.
And,
yep.
And, you know, that's why the FDA comes out with position statements that silicone implants don't cause systemic disease, while at the same time on their website they have a study that the FDA helped pay for that shows that women with ruptured implants have high levels of fibromyalgia, which is really chemical and biotoxicity. But, you know, they're just, I guess they think we're stupid. I mean, that's the only thing I can get. And most doctors are. They don't research things. I mean, they really don't. But I gave a talk on the FDA. I'm sorry?
People in general are less intelligent about what's going on.
Right. I don't know. A lot of my nurses research.
Oh, do they?
The nurses have a medical education, and they tend to research more. They come in with a lot more information on stuff than their doctors have. It's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But I gave a talk at the Truth Convention on the FDA called What You Don't Know About What You're Putting in Your Body, and talked about nanotechnology, genetically modified foods, implants, cosmetics, and skincare products, radiation, which is really good. I would not advise people to go through the radiation line at the airport. Go ahead and get padded down. It's a lot healthier for you.
Right.
And that is on YouTube if you want to watch it. It's just information that you may not know that impacts your daily life. And if you think the FDA regulates these things, I want to tell you one thing. They regulate them, but in the favor of the company, not in the favor of the consumer.
Right.
In every instance. So, you know, buyer beware.
Right, right.
So what can people do other than stop smoking or not be around secondhand smoke and check your house for radon? What would you recommend they do to prevent lung cancer?
Well, you've mentioned the major causes, and that is it's over 90% secondary, primary smoking, and radon is another, 2%. But I think that you need to live a healthy lifestyle that keeps your immune system built up, and starting with food, what I do, and I haven't had any recurrence, and I rarely have any illnesses, and I'm 80, and I have no chronic illnesses, no prescribed medications. And so based on what I have done, I eat organic because of the things you mentioned, because of the genetically modified, the growth hormones, the pesticides. Or I do in the summer, there's some people, neighbors, that have gardens, and they put stuff out in the front yard, and they put a little honor system. You put in, you weigh stuff, and you put the money in. I buy from them in the summertime because I figure that they aren't genetically modified and all. Mm-hmm. And so I don't eat beef. I eat chicken and some fish and seafood, not a lot because of the mercury. And I never eat farm-grown salmon because of the toxins. I mm-hmm. don't eat sugar. I haven't for years. I don't use the microwave very often. I don't eat barbecued very often because, again, that can be cancer-producing, the
nitrates,
where it gets very charred. I'm very careful about the water. Now, for a long time, I used distilled water. And then I read, because I figured that even if it took all of the minerals and vitamins out of my body, I would put them back in with supplements.
Right.
But then I read that distilled water tends to make you more acidic. And so I stopped using that completely. I may use it 2 or 3 months, and then I use a good quality spring water. And then, as I say, I use the Azuma product that's minerals and maintain alkalinity, and I test my urine periodically. And then I take a lot of supplements like the fish oil. I take lecithin. I've taken that for probably 30 years. I take a probiotic for GI health. I take some herbs for an enlarged prostate that handles it very nicely, and I was fortunate to get to about 77 before I had any problems with an enlarged prostate.
That's great. Most people have that.
And then I was getting up every hour during the night, and so I found. And one thing for listeners, your listeners, and you, I'm sure you know this, Susan, but for people that listening that don't. Men often have problems with the urinary flow as they get older, and pumpkin seed is fantastic. You urinate like a 21-year-old, and
really?
So I take three. And for listeners that aren't familiar, one of the places that I like very much, and it meets a lot of my needs, is Life Extension. And so I get a lot of my supplements at Life Extension. And so I use that. I use CranMax, which is a capsule that's comparable to 8 glasses of cranberry juice. And that kind of keeps the urinary tract, clean.
Free of infection.
Right. So yeah, I use a variety of herbs and all. And occasionally I will use the apricot kernels.
Where do you get those online?
I get those through Apricot Power on the internet, and they also have the Laetril for people that are interested. And one thing, Susan, that I've noticed is that the price is not that much more than it was 38 years ago. I paid around $100 a month, and you can now use the dosage that I used for about $110, $120 a month. So it's not really that much more than it was, you know, way back when. I walk every day. I get up at 6, 6:30. I live on the Chesapeake, and I walk for an hour on the beach. I keep very mentally alert with my radio show and with writing, and I hear from a lot of cancer patients that are asking for information, and I try to share that with them as best I can and also refer them to alternative physicians. I use daily prayer and meditation. I use affirmations when indicated. And I also will find, when I go to my doctor and he tells me I have a problem, I'll find a natural way to deal with it. For example, I went and I had diverticulitis, and he gave me a prescription for steroids, and I didn't want to take them. And he also told me I would never eat berries or nuts again. And so I I got aloe vera, and I started drinking like 4 ounces in the morning, 4 ounces at night, and mm-hmm. in about 4 or 5 days, the symptoms were all gone. And I eat berries every morning on my cereal. I eat 4 pounds of nuts a week, and mm-hmm. that was 25 years ago, and I've never had a problem
right.
since. But when I do the when they do colonoscopies, they always tell me I have diverticulosis, and I say that's fine as long as it doesn't bother me.
Right.
So
yeah.
I always find I try to build up my immune system. I did have pneumonia that slipped through after Hurricane Isabel.
That's because you were exposed to mold.
Right. I was, right, because I had yeah. 3 feet of water through my house. And so I started using something called Host Defense that was
uh-huh,
made
yeah,
out of 17 types of mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
But then I found something that was even better. And when they put me on colostrum, which, as mm-hmm. you know, is the milk, the first milk of the mother after the newborn,
uh-huh.
and I get the colostrum, and I take 3 capsules in the morning and 3 at night, and that even knocked out the allergies that I developed after Hurricane Isabel.
You know how that works? Colostrum
no.
increases IgE, which is good for allergies, in the respiratory and sinuses. That's how
really?
That works. Yeah,
oh.
and I wanted to tell you about a treatment we have for moldy houses. Because,
uh-huh.
you know, you can treat it with traditional stuff, but then the mold can come back because it gets
right,
resistant.
Right.
So we use something called God's Tears, which is thieves plus menthol in a cold
mm-hmm.
diffuser. And you just diffuse about 72 hours in each part of the house that has mold, each level. And that helps kill all the mold. And that's been
that
very successful.
God's Tears?
We sell it as God's Tears because Thieves
uh-huh.
is expensive.
Uh-huh.
Thieves is like $90 for an ounce, and we sell 2 ounces for 50 Tears.
Oh.
So, because we
uh-huh.
have a lot of people
uh-huh.
that have moldy houses. See, they get moldy
uh-huh.
houses, and they get mold in their breast implants, and then they get really sick.
Oh.
Then they come
right.
to me.
Uh-huh.
I have a thing uh-huh. on Monsters Inside Me on Animal Planet right now on mold and
uh-huh.
breast implants. So,
uh-huh.
You can go to Dr. Mercola's site, and I did an hour interview with him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's on silicone and saline implant problems. So,
mm-hmm.
see, silicone is basically chemical toxicity, and then saline is usually just biotoxicity from mold. So I'm not surprised
mm-hmm.
you got so sick after that. I think a lot of people did. I think a lot of people
oh.
need to understand that if you have mold in your house, you probably need to get out of your house
right.
until
right.
it gets cleared up, not breathe that stuff
mm-hmm.
in. Because
right.
mold
yeah.
produces a toxin that lowers your immune system.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why so many people got sick cleaning up after Rita and Katrina. I had a couple mm-hmm. of people who came back to sleep on moldy mattresses and ended up with infected breast implants. So,
oh.
I even called mm-hmm. the plastic surgeons down there and told them to be on alert for it because, you know, they might not think of that, but it happens.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, one thing I've been fighting for 5 years, and that is my eye doctor has been trying to get me to have cataract surgery
mm-hmm.
for 5 years, and I realize that it's pretty easy and pretty effective now, but my vision is very poor in one eye, and I'm afraid
mm-hmm.
if anything happened to the other eye, I'd have real problems. So I've been taking supplements for that for 5 years, and you know, it's worked out fine.
Good.
I go back and my vision gets better. So there are things now, if they didn't have the preservatives in that I would use, that supposedly dissolves the cataracts. But because I'm allergic to some of the preservatives, I'm afraid to use them. So I take
mm-hmm.
all things that are oral.
Right, yeah. I was taking a supplement to help because I had a retinal thing, you know, with floaters, and
mm-hmm.
We ran out of it. And I just noticed now that they're back, so I got to go back on it.
Now, do you take E? Do you take vitamin
I'm
E?
I'm sorry. Not vitamin E. I'm on too many other things that are blood thinners. So.
Oh,
too many other supplements. So, no, yeah. This reminds me I need to get back on this other thing for your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So, I take
lutein, has lutein, and I also take something that has kerosene.
Yeah, kerosene, that's it. That's what it is, kerosene.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll have to go look and see if we've got it back in stock.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was working just fine until I stopped taking it. Anyway.
Yeah, it doesn't work. It's like a friend of mine once said, I think I'll win the lottery tonight. And her husband said, well, you don't have a ticket.
Yeah,
so
right.
It's not going to help you if you don't use
maybe
it not, right now.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, would you like to give your contact information, Carl?
Right. My site for the book is www.beatlungcancer.net, and then I have a lot of information and my shows that I archive after they're broadcast on BBS is at holistichealthshow.com.
And you can get Carl's show interviewing me on his archive.
Right.
So. This isn't the first time we've spoken together. So,
right. We've done two, I believe, Susan. Right?
Yeah, we have. That's right. That's right.
Both are very interesting.
Yeah, they were. Well, you certainly have an extensive background in all sorts of information on holistic health based on, and I think it's good, too, that people who are educated in holistic health also understand anatomy and physiology and pathophysiology.
Right.
I think that's really important that they have a good solid basis of medicine, you know, and then add to it with functional medicine and all the things we've been talking about today.
We both went to Hopkins, and I think
a lot
of my holistic background came from the School of Public Health at Hopkins because everything was epidemiology and very mm-hmm. much focused on the man, agent, environment triad. And there's so much focus on the variables in man, the variables in the environment and all. And so really what they were talking about was what we now call holism.
That's true. And Hopkins put out this really good summary of a lot of what we talked about today. Mm-hmm. In terms of things you can do easily, alkalinity, sugar, you know, oxygen. And they put that out, I don't know, it was several years ago. I'm on their mailing list, you know, their email list.
Mm-hmm.
And so I printed mm-hmm. it off and I hand it to people. I mean, I think it's mm-hmm. a good overall summary. And I was so surprised it came out of Hopkins. You know, like,
right.
I mean, I really enjoyed being at Hopkins. I think they're a great educational institution. But, you know, you just don't see that sort of enlightened stuff coming out of a Ivy League school, do you?
No.
Not usually. But maybe Hopkins is different. Maybe that's why we went there. I don't know.
Could be. But, right.
Yeah.
Because we're both a little different. Right, Susan?
Well, just a little, but hopefully don't get in too much trouble because of it. But, But anyway, well, we're coming up at the end of our hour. Is there anything you'd like to tell our listeners before we sign off?
I think the parting thing I'd like to say is to the listeners is when your doctor says you've got 6 months to live, don't be rushed into a decision. It's your decision. And if you need time to think about it, take a little bit of time, not a lot, but take a little bit of time and decide what you want to do because it's your life and it's your responsibility, not the doctor's responsibility.
Good words of advice. So I've been
interviewing
Dr. Carl Helvey, who is a RN and a DRPH. What does that stand for, by the way?
Doctorate of Public Health.
Uh-huh. Public Health, okay.
Hopkins is the one school that has the DRPH. All the other schools have DPH.
Okay.
So if you see DRPH, you know it's
Hopkins. Yeah. So he is uniquely qualified to write this book, being a 38-year survivor, probably the oldest survivor, at least in the United States, of lung cancer. And his book is You Can Beat Lung Cancer Using Alternative Integrative Interventions. And he has a lot of great information in here, not just on treating cancer, but also preventing cancer, and great, great supporting material, like Bernie Siegel wrote a chapter. He's a cancer surgeon, previous cancer surgeon at Yale, wrote a chapter on mind-body medicine as it applies to cancer. And just a wealth of information in this book from someone who's been doing this a lot longer than I have, and is healthy and able to show the results of it in himself. So thanks so much, Carl. I really appreciate you taking the time today.
And thank you, Susan. I've enjoyed it.
Okay. Take care. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, Temple of Health Radio Show. Next week, we will be interviewing Ernesto Ortiz, the Akashic Record, Sacred Wisdom for Transformation. And then Dr. Eric Love, Physician, Heal Thyself. I think I need to read that book a couple of times, on the 15th. And then Killer Clothes, How Seemingly Innocent Clothing Choices Endanger Your Health. I think that's something that it has not been emphasized, the effect of the different things, the different chemicals on our clothes and dry cleaning and that kind of thing. We'll be interviewing Dr. Clement on that book on the 22nd, and then finishing out the year with Marie Jones, 2013, End of Days or a New Beginning, Envisioning the World After the Events of 2012. Anyway, thank you very much for joining us. Join us next week.